Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing how to improve health outcomes in regional Australia, including the social determinants of health and the importance of more nuanced measures of need and access. My special guests are Associate Professor Bernadette Ward and Dr. Pam Harvey, both at the School of Rural Health at Monash University in Bendigo. Associate Professor Ward and Dr. Harvey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Sam.
Bernadette, I'll start with you. You've written recently in Insight Plus about health disparities in regional Australia. What are the challenges you see at the moment in this space?
Well, I think, you know, the health disparities are very well documented, but this is an opportunity for us to take a step back. We invest large amounts of money and resources into building the workforce in rural and regional areas, and certainly that's really important. But I think we can now talk about where are those resources more specifically needed. And to do that, we can look at where healthcare fits, and where it does fit, what are the things we need to consider. So we know that a large proportion of the disparities in health comes are due to social factors. And you only need to look at Michael Marmot's work in the UK and how they've been able to address many of those things by having a concerted effort in social and intergenerational factors, where health professionals might be involved, but they're not the primary point where people present.
So Bernadette, you're really talking about those social factors that impact health.
We know there's an increasing number of people who are presenting to healthcare services with a lot of social problems. And so we need to think about how we can best address this. And one of the things we need to think about is what is need. So just turning up to a healthcare service may or may not reflect your level of need. So, for example, in the 2018-19 National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Service survey, 32% of people said that despite the fact they thought they needed healthcare, they actually didn't go because of factors around discrimination and cultural appropriateness. This speaks into the inverse care law, which talks about the people who most need care are the ones who are least likely to go. So as we move into an era of better evidence-based care, the inequities in health outcomes between those who are able to access and those who aren't are exacerbated. And so it makes us think about, for those who need health care, access is more than just putting a service there. Access is about saying, how acceptable is the service? How is it structured? You know, how easy is it for people to get there?
So, Bernadette, how would this more enlightened form of access work?
Access is more than just a fixed thing. It's actually dynamic. The characteristics of the service interact with the characteristics of the people. And people's ability to perceive that they've got a need, then to go there and say, this service is acceptable, easy for me to get to. When I get to the service, I can utilise it easily and I can take on board what's needed to happen to get the better health outcomes. But we don't see that happening. In Queensland, you look at the large study of vulnerable children, and majority of their presentations were to emergency departments compared to the less vulnerable children. So we need to make it a lot easier for those who most need care to get it.
And Pam, I'll turn to you. To make care easier for people to access, are we talking about changes at a local health district level or perhaps at a state level? Where do we need to see these changes?
We probably need to see them everywhere, really. Because if you think of the funding models that are currently available, they do limit the nuances you can apply to healthcare. So, for example, if you think of the amount of money that's being put towards chronic healthcare compared to acute and episodic healthcare in a larger regional service, you'll see that we've got a disparity there already. So if we can look at what is funded where and apply it to a local solution to suit community need, we'll have better outcomes because people will be able to see that their needs are being met in a more in different ways in different healthcare models. It might be that you trial, for example, there's a lot of talk at the moment about nurse practitioner-led clinics, for example, to complement the GP clinics that already exist in places, to make sure that we're matching the type of service that people need to the range of health disciplines that are apparent in a particular location.
And Bernadette, if I can go to you, you've written about doctors needing to practice at the upper end of their scope, particularly in these regional areas. Tell me about the importance of that.
Well, I think we, invest a considerable amount of money in training healthcare professionals. And so we want to make sure as a health system we're getting bang for buck. That means that we want people to work collaboratively in teams where people can say, I have expertise in this and it's been utilised. So that means the underpinning systems are not bogging down our health professionals. They're actually able to practice in the way that is discipline specific, that we make the most of their skills. Now, we're certainly not saying professionals out there aren't working hard. They are. And that's part of the challenge. We want to make it easier for people because we want to reduce the rates of burnout and, ongoing churn and turnover of health staff.
And Pam, let me turn to you. It really sounds like a multidisciplinary approach is needed. How successful is this approach at the moment in regional areas? And do we still have a way to go?
I think we do still have a way to go. It depends on where you're located and where you're working and what funding models support this process of multidisciplinary team. It's easier in regional centres, of course, which have large health services to be multidisciplinary because there are clinics for all sorts of things that are manned by different, that are staffed by different health professionals. But if you're out in a more isolated area where there are limited health professionals available and you're also struggling, perhaps as a GP, to make ends meet, how do you actually employ others to help you? How do you create a multidisciplinary team in the current funding model? We've got different things happening at the moment being trialled out there with networks of people drawing together integrated health systems, coming together to support and to trial different models. So I think we're on the cusp of change. It feels like something has happened, even though we have been looking at workforce shortages for a long time now. The realisation that by training more health professionals does not mean that you get better healthcare in smaller towns and areas out there is really coming to fruition. We need to stop doing what we've always done and to try something different and to put money into evaluating these different models of care to see whether they actually produce better health outcomes for the people in our care.
My special guests today are Associate Professor Bernadette Ward at the School of Rural Health at Monash University in Bendigo and Dr. Pam Harvey, who's also at the School of Rural Health at Monash University in Bendigo. Bernadette, let's talk about models of care. You've talked about people needing to access healthcare at times and places that are right for them, perhaps after hours or weekend primary care services. What are some examples of this that could really help regional areas?
So I think if we really want to improve the health outcomes of our population, we have to target those who've got the highest levels of need. And we can do that. And we need to have more nuanced approaches there in terms of measuring the health status of the people in the community and the geographical locations where we target that. But once we are clear where health sits, then we also need to provide services that are easier to get to. So there are models out there that, are co-located. We can say, while you're here, without being too flippant, would you like chips with that? So while you're here for this service, would you like this service? we've got this person who can also do this. And you make it really, really easy.
And Pam, do you also have examples of new ways of working or new models of care that could help regional areas?
There are a couple of examples from the literature, one being the study that Bernie mentioned before in Queensland, where they were placing GP registrars into areas of highest need so that the people that were training to be GPs actually provided a service for those who needed it the most in those areas. We see the same reflected with different models of health professional students being placed in service learning models where they provide a student service to an area that wasn't receiving a service before but needed a service. For example, putting speech pathology students into schools that have no access to speech pathologists, full stop. We also see that there are some current trials of nurse practitioner-led clinics. They seem to be spreading out across Victoria at the very least. So we see that nuanced model. It's looking at ways to sustain those different models if they prove to be useful for the community that they're being placed in. That is a really big challenge. At the moment, you can see some PHNs supporting nurse practitioner models, but is that going to be sustainable? We're not quite sure.
And Bernadette, for our listeners, can you clarify who are the categories of people who are most at need?
We only need to look at the social determinants of health here. So if we look at the CIFA index, the socioeconomic index for areas, and more specifically, we look at the index of relative socioeconomic advantage and disadvantage, you can see clusters at very small geographical levels of people that are in very high levels of need. You can also look at the burden of disease data by local government area. You can look at housing data. There are multiple vulnerabilities that you can easily gather for geographical areas to target services. At a more nuanced level, we can look at patterns of socioeconomic disadvantage across generations. And, you know, while we've got lots of evidence-based approaches to addressing things like lifestyle, behavioural problems, we have to realise it's not a one-size-fits-all. There's little effectiveness in telling someone to stop smoking if they have experienced decades of trauma, socioeconomic disadvantage and a homeless, etc. It's going to need a lot more than just advice from a health professional. And so I think we can target those things, but it needs a broader approach and we need to work out where do expert health professionals fit in this and what are the things that need to happen before we get to the health professionals.
And what about the level of coordination of health services in regional areas? Pam, how important is that level of coordination and is there enough of it?
Well, yes, it is very important. And I suspect that part of the issues is that people are working really hard in their own clinics and in their own areas at the moment. So to do that extra coordination of what's around in a particular location, whether it be a town or a region, will take that extra that perhaps people haven't got the energy or the resources to provide at the minute. I also suspect that with the advent of telehealth, we do see some services that come to people or people are utilising services that their key worker knows nothing about, you know, that hasn't actually come to the fore yet in a conversation. So maybe we're seeing more outsourced sources coming into people's regular healthcare. And maybe that also applies to those things that Bernie was talking about, is addressing the needs of people at a more social level. Perhaps people are receiving some services that their key health workers know nothing about. So it is really important to get the best outcome for people, generally speaking, if people do know what's happening on both sides of the equation.
And finally, Bernadette, what's your perspective on changing the focus away from more doctors, more nurses, more dollars to something that is more nuanced?
Look, I think there's some doctors out there who are providing really high quality care that is providing continuity for consumers with really challenging health status problems. And I think we need to acknowledge that through the Medicare system. We need to encourage that continuity of care and reward those doctors who are practicing at the within the top of their range of practice. I think we also need to make it easier for doctors in terms of the multiple systems, particularly digital ones that they're working across, reduce the amount of infrastructure that they have to face so that they can focus on what they're already experts at. We know that people bypass lots of services because they're seeking to get some other aspect of care that is more acceptable to them. So we need to communicate that across someone's healthcare chain. I think the other thing that we really need to think about is supporting community-controlled services. We only need to look to Canada and see the inroads they have made in terms of health disparities to see what difference community control makes to a service and to ultimately population health comes. And I think we've got a long way to go there in Australia.
Associate Professor Bernadette Ward and Dr. Pam Harvey, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
My special guests have been Associate Professor Bernadette Ward and Dr. Pam Harvey, both at the School of Rural Health at Monash University in Bendigo. You can listen to more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for joining me.